Welcome to Booking the Territory, a pro wrestling podcast hosted by Mike Mills and Doc Turner. This podcast is all about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. And now, here's your host, Mike Mills.
Welcome back, wrestling fans, and thank you for downloading Booking the Territory this week. I got another good show for y'all this week as I've got part three of my conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcock, as he goes off about the one and only Bill DeMott, former head trainer for WWE Developmental. We're going to get to that in a second, though. Before we jump into that conversation, just let me give some love to our sponsor, TNA's Wrestling Palace. They're located in Grand Prairie, Texas at Traders Village in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You can check them out also on Facebook at TNA's Wrestling Palace. They're your one-stop shop for all of your wrestling memorabilia needs. You've heard me talk about it a million times. They got replica belts, toys for the kids, anything you want wrestling memorabilia-wise, they have. So check them out on Facebook under TNA's Wrestling Palace or go to Twitter. They're on Twitter at TANDASWRESTPALC. Even if you're not in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they will ship to you. So give them a call at 682-561-6966. They help us out, so please help them. Thanks again to TNA's Wrestling Palace for your support. So like I was saying in the opening, this week is part three of my conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott. And if you thought last week's discussion about the Awesome Kong Facebook post had some controversy in it, just wait till you hear what Big Daddy Yum Yum has to say about Bill DeMott. Now, I know Bill DeMott was recently on Chris Jericho's podcast, and he basically explained a lot about why things were the way they were and how he was built on the show Tough Enough in previous seasons. He was built as this basic asshole trainer, and when that's promoted, it then becomes what's known as its own reality. So perception becomes reality. I completely understood what Mr. DeMott had to say about that. So, however, the things that Big Daddy Yum Yum talks about are unreal. I mean, I was sitting there, and you'll hear me at times. I'm kind of like, really? Just kind of taken aback by like, man, that just sounds freaking crazy. So I'm not here to take sides, but I've known Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott, for a long time. I mean, I've known Byron for years, getting close to 10 years now. And I have no doubt that he's speaking the truth about what happened in his situation. And I just believe him. There's no other words or way for me to say it. So as I say that, if this were to ever get to Bill DeMott, I don't care. I hope he does listen to it. I am more than happy with him coming on the show and speaking his mind about that situation that Big Daddy Yum Yum speaks of at that time when they trained together. So that's that. And like I said, if you thought last week's was controversial, just wait till you hear this week's. So after me and Big Daddy Yum Yum's conversation, we're going to get into the week in review. And in actuality, we got a bunch of listener questions this week that we've been getting in our inbox and on Twitter. So one of the main things I want to do is we're going to talk a little bit about what happened, but I also need to address these questions that we're getting. So, hey, fans, I appreciate it. Thank you. Keep sending them in. I said once on Twitter, and I'll keep saying it a million times, if you send the question, we will get to it. Sometimes we don't get to it that week, but eventually we'll get to it. And some questions are kind of repetitive. They're basically asking the same thing. So just keep that in mind as we're saying that. So hope y'all had fun watching wrestling this week. We're going to touch on the high points of what we saw, some of the low points as well, and we'll go from there. So let's get to our conversation of part three, I'm sorry, with if I said part two, that was a mistake a little while ago. But part three of my conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott, where he talks all about what happened between him and Bill DeMott. Hold on, fans, we'll get right to it.
The only other, now that we got that out of the way, the only other thing I got to ask you, since you told me nothing's off limits, is you were pretty vocal, at least not completely vocal, but you said on Facebook after you heard about what happened with Bill DeMott, you just kind of voiced your opinion on it. So I just want to give you some time if you want to say anything about that and, you know, what your feelings were on the issue, because I believe you were with him when you were down there doing your FCW time. Is that correct?
No, not at FCW. Bill DeMott wasn't at FCW. He was at Deep
South.
That's
right. Okay.
Just getting to the right, trying to get there to wrestle WWE. You know, I wrestled a lot of places, took a lot of shit bookings, did a lot of stuff. End up hurting my neck, you know. But, you know, I came in with pedigree. I was trained by Dr. Death. retrained with Rodney Mack and Jazz, WWE Women's mm-hmm. Champion, WWE Superstar, Dr. Death, WWE, WCW, All Japan Superstar. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had fucking pedigree, you know.
Right.
And 6'5", at that time, a little chubby, you know, 260, 260 pounds, 6'5". Not too bad, you know, and hell of a prospect. Like, a year in, I went backstage and went to a WWE show, house show, met Arn Anderson, met Sergeant Slaughter, and chit-chatted with them, gave them stuff about me, kind of got in the system a little bit. A year later, trained with Rodney Mack. I think I graduated in 2004. Ended up moving down to South Louisiana, and I must have had a tryout in 2005. I had a WWE mm-hmm. tryout in 2005. And at that point in time, WWE was doing some tryouts in the local areas. They got some people. Actually, on the tryout that I had, it was me, Kenny King, there's in TNA and ROH, and Byron mm-hmm. Saxon, who's now in WWE. Mm-hmm. We were all there at that tryout, along with some of the OVW talents at the time, Jen Bull and several others. And they're doing these tryouts all around the country. They put you on the WWE website. And I was a hell of a prospect. And I think Bill DeMott was over. Bill DeMott, Mike Knox, Derek Nairick, something like that. And... Mm-hmm. Doc Gallows was there. And that was when Deep South and OVW were both developmental territories. And so was there with that, trying to get a tryout, trying to get on in WWE. And, mm-hmm. like, Bill DeMott, he was just a shit trainer, man. Like, he wasn't there to evaluate you and see if you could possibly a future WWE superstar. He was just there to see if he could make you puke. That was his whole objective, is to prove how hard it was and make somebody puke, you know, get a laugh out of it. And mm-hmm. that's all the objective is. And, like, over time I've learned, I was like, hey, we're going to do 1,000 hack squats. This is, fuck you. I'm not doing 1,000 hack squats. Hack squats have nothing to do with pro wrestling. Anybody that tells you otherwise is a fucking liar. All hack squats are, is something for you to do a whole bunch of, tear your knees up, and get you super tired so they can whoop your ass. That's what hack squats are for. Don't let them fool you. That's what they're for.
Hack squats ain't no joke, man. I do them at the gym, dude. That's
I ain't saying they ain't hard. I'm just saying they ain't got shit to do with wrestling.
No, I hear you. I hear you,
being
man.
On the monkey bars. It's hard too. Yeah. You do a wrestling.
That's
you
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
If we're going to do some exercises, let's do some exercises that have something to do with wrestling. You know, not let me make you throw up. And so, yeah. Like, he came in, all cordial. We're going to do this, blah, blah, blah. Good try. And y'all be the next superstar. In actuality, that wasn't his goal. As we're doing wrestling, all those little exercises and stupid exercises. Only one exercise we had was what I say was, like, interesting, and that was a drill where you had to lay down and then you have to get up depending on your left or your right, whereas most people are going to automatically get up to your right. But every once in a while, in wrestling, you have to get up to your left because it's not a sport where you're always going to fall or land in the right place. So sometimes you got to be ready to get up to your left. And I thought that was a unique drill. But other than that, all of them were full of bullshit. They're bullshit drills. And it was just stuff designed to get you tired. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, once you're too tired, now you can't do what you're here to do, which is wrestle and show off your wrestling ability after you're exhausted. And so that's what he did. Hey, do 100 hack squats. Now run up from the bottom of the Coliseum to the top 6 times. All right, let's mm-hmm. do 100 push-ups. Now, mind you, while he's doing this, he's not doing any of it. And my thing is, don't ask somebody else to do something that you're not capable of doing it yourself. And this fat ass wasn't capable of doing shit. So he's got us doing hack squats, push-ups, jumping jacks. He ain't doing shit because he got two bum knees. And I've watched this motherfucker since he was in WCW. I know all your shit. I know who you are, what you accomplished, which amounts to jack shit. So what makes you worthy of training somebody? I don't know, because the only thing I know that you're famous of is for starting the streak with Goldberg. But that's about it. So we're doing all this stuff. He's not doing any of it. Neither are the guys that he's got watching us. So it's kind of hard. To me, I think it's hard for you to go, hey, you can do this stuff and now do this, and it's not overdoing it, because you're not doing it with them. You don't have ideas, okay, this is the limit, you know, where it becomes training, where it becomes detrimental to their body. Because he's not doing anything. He's just sitting on his fat ass. And, and so we do all this stuff, and at the end of it, okay, and he's like, he goes, okay, let's wrestle. Put guys in the ring, and he's like, shoot, don't matter to me. Shit, if y'all can't do it, I'm looking for people that can't do it. That way, they'll figure it, give up on y'all, and put me back on TV. I want to be on TV. I need to get that check. You know, you're a trainer. Either you're a trainer or you're going to be a wrestling talent. You don't need to be both. You know, you can't have aspirations of getting back on TV and then aspirations of training new talent. It's either one or the other, because you're going to sabotage yourself. You know, you can't do both. And so that's me personally. I think, you know, with him, the way they were doing it, with the Tough Enough and going out and finding talent and how they do it now, I think he was personally against it and trying to sabotage it. Let me see what I can do so I can get my guys in, or get myself back on TV, not necessarily reveling in his position and going, hey, you know what? I'm going to be the best trainer. I'm going to be the best talent finder I can find. And so once the time for wrestling came, mm-hmm. nobody – well, besides Kenny King, I mean, I guess he's just a phenomenal freaking athlete. He was the only person that looked good after all that training, but Kenny King. But
I got you.
But everybody else looked terrible. They're tripping over their feet. Their legs are exhausted. They can't jump. Like, people are crashing into each other because they're physically have been pushed to their limit.
It sounds like I didn't mean to cut you off, but it sounds like. Like, I think about, you know, leg day at the gym. You know, you sit there and you do your squats and you do your leg presses and you do your, you know, extensions and leg curls and all these different things, and you exhaust them to no point. You've been in the gym. You walk out the gym after doing legs, and it's like, oh, my God, you know, you're like a baby giraffe that don't know how to walk. You've seen the videos and memes and things like that, and you're like, it sounds like after all of that, you were asked to go in there and work, and I can see what you're saying, why it would be hard.
You can't get a proper evaluation on how well you can work after you've done 1,000 hack squats. It's impossible. You know, what did we do? We didn't do 1,000. We did either 700 or 800 squats. And then we ran up and down the Coliseum from the bottom to the top 6 times. Not once. 6 times in between each set of hack squats, 6 times up and down. One time up, one time down. One time up, one time down. You know?
Yeah.
So a total of 6 times you're going up and down these steps. And you're moving. It ain't no jog. Hey, run up them. So by the end of that, your legs are exhausted, not to mention the jumping jacks, the push-ups, the sit-ups. Like in the Army, like I was in the Army. I was M1A1 tank commander. Mm-hmm. You max out on, I think, sit-ups. You max out on sit-ups at 80-something to 90 sit-ups, same way for push-ups. And that's the max in a two-minute period. Most people can't do 100 push-ups in 2 minutes. You know, you max out and you can't, it gets less and less. So they take you to your max. You know, you get ready to do your evaluation. You do however many you can in 2 minutes, and you crank them out. That's pretty much it. You know, I can probably do 60, 65 to 70 push-ups in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I got you.
But after that, you start wobbling. You can't do anything. You're muscle fatigued. You got lactic acid built up. So
it builds up.
I've been playing sports. I've been in the military. I've had physical tests. I know there's a point in time where you can't do anymore, or you become sloppy and start falling and tripping over yourself because you're just pushing forward. And so that's what that time was. And so lucky nobody got seriously hurt. My knees were hurting. My ankles were hurting. Everything's hurting when I left. Besides Kenny King, everybody had a shitty match. And it was just, I spent all this money coming down here to get evaluated, to try to get this job. And you never really got a good evaluation of me because you were trying to physically hurt me. And then, two, with the things he said about wanting everybody to fail so he could be back on TV. And then, oh, here's the bully part. So you get in the ring. They had a guy has a match. Boom, boom, boom. One guy messes up, and they finish the match. He's like, hey, here's what you did wrong. You should have did this. Let me show you something. So he takes the guy, waist locks him, slams him down. Bill, the mop weighs 300 pounds, bro. Slams him down, all his weight on. Boom, squishes the guy like a pancake. And so now he's doing all these, like, wrestling, you know, go-behinds and riding them like amateur wrestling and shit. And the guy's too tired to fight back, too tired to do anything. He just did 1,000 hack squats, ran up the building, up and down the Coliseum six repetitions, seven sets, just had a match, and now you're picking him up, squashing him, and showing off and getting a good laugh out of it. So he does this every match. First match happens, he does that. Second match happens. Let me show you this. Does this to this. Does some, you know, manhandles another guy. Third match was Jen Bull, a girl from OVW, and Mike Knox. They did a match. So he didn't really mess with her. And then the fourth match is my match. And so I don't even remember who I wrestled, but I wrestled somebody. And, you know, like I said, sloppy match. The match is super sloppy. And
right.
So he tells the guy, hey, this is what you should have did, this right here with him, blah, blah, blah. And, man, he picks me up on a waist lock. He would do, like, lock up, waist lock, go behind into a waist lock. He picks me up. He pops his hips, shoots me right up into the air, and slams me, drops all his fat ass on top of me. Like, literally, like, some of my stomach, up in my stomach came up into my throat, you know. I could taste it. That's how hard he landed on me. And so I'm like, fuck this shit. And I sat out immediately. As soon as I could, I came to all fours, sat out, reached into his thigh, and popped his and was able to pop his waist lock off. And I go behind him and shove him, put my thigh in his butt and shove him down so he's on his belly now. And so Steve Kern dives in. Boom, what are you doing? I'm wrestling. And he's like, oh, you want to wrestle, huh? I'm like, sure. I'm not going to let him sit on me. And so he's like, well, do something. I was like, I'm waiting on him. Go. And so he's moving around. I'm moving around on top of him, standing on top of him. And so I knew I'm not going to be able to, you know, outstrength this guy. But what I can do is ride him and stay on top of him, keep my leg in between his ass, and keep him shoved down where he can't go anywhere. And so at that point, Steve Kern realizes the situation that DeMott's in. And so he's like, well, pin him. And I was like, no, I'm going to wait on him. I'm going to get him. And so he's like, I want you to pin him now. You need to do something now. And so I'm like, well, shit, what the fuck am I going to do? And so I reach under, grab his wrist. Didn't work. Tried to shoot the half. Just wasn't physically strong enough to turn him over. So when I grabbed that wrist and I tried to pull him, you know, he ended up, grabbing a hold of me, was able to grab a hold of me, leaned over, rolled on top of me, put his weight on me, and pinned me. Steve Kern counted to three. He got up huffing and puffing, and Kern told me to get out the ring. So, I just wasn't going to take it. You're not going to do me the way you do all these other people, you know. He won. He got out of it. But I'm not going to be no punk and let you abuse me, you know. And that's what I think he was. After that, he never did it to anybody else. After that, he's tired. He's done. And he didn't do it to anybody else. So that was my take on it. You know, if what you were doing was so important that you had to do – that you had to squash those other three people, and then whenever you got confronted, now it's not that important to do it anymore. You know, you're just being a bully. You didn't have anything to show them. You just wanted to get your laughs and jolly. But now you're tired just like everybody else is tired. And that's what the whole exercise is, in my opinion. All those exercises were used to wear all these young guys down. Because I'm 24, 25 at the time. Saxton probably 22, 23. And Saxton's Jack. He takes that Jack off. He's a Jack dude. And a lot of the other guys are pretty in-shape guys. But can't take you fresh, but I wear you down. And now I can have fun with you, make a laugh, make a joke, and go, oh, none of these guys are ready. None of these guys should be in WWE. And that's, to me, what it was all about for him, is just having shit and jollies and bullying people around and having something to laugh about later. Did you see that look on his face? And I did this. But he met the wrong one that day. And me personally, I look at that as a wasted opportunity for WWE and myself, because I spent three more years on the indies grinding it out to get there, which I eventually did. Byron Saxton spent two and a half more years on the indies grinding out to get there, which he did. Kenny King spent three more years grinding out on the indies to get to ROH, to get to TNA, which he eventually did. So you had three guys, at the very least three guys, who did end up making an impact, whether it be in TNA, WWE, New Japan. You had three guys that were there that made an impact. Three black guys, which, I'm going to be honest, WWE doesn't even have a main event black guy right now. They're missing out on 13% of the population that could be getting behind that guy. But you missed out on three guys that could have been that guy, that could have been money, and let them grind out on the indies, get injuries, not learn the WWE system for so long. And that's 3 years they could have been in developmental and made an impact, you know, instead of grinding out on the indies.
Yeah.
And been there and ready. So, he shortchanged me. He shortchanged Sax. He shortchanged King. He shortchanged WWE and wrestling fans, because he was short-sighted. And instead of doing his job, he's out there for shits and giggles playing around. And so that's my gripe with Bill DeMott. Fuck Bill DeMott.
I hear you, man. I knew there was something there because, I saw what you said. It was brief, but, I mean, I can read into it. I got the point. And, I've known, I don't want to say the names, but I know of at least one, two other people who they didn't have the same experience as you, but they definitely – they didn't talk about him like he was the nicest guy in the world. Let me say that.
No, he's not the nicest guy in the world.
So, but that's for them to tell that story. You know, I don't, you know, that's up to them if they want to hear that, and they haven't to this point from what I know. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do know that it, I've heard some things. So, and that's why I wanted to ask you about it, as somebody who had had a little experience. I did not know that story. I didn't realize Saxton and King were at that same deal with you. And
this is the thing, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people were at that deal. A lot of people did the thing. But what's so funny is they ended up hiring a guy to be that dude. And the dude turned out to be crazy. They hired the one crazy dude to do that spot, you know? Like,
really?
Why? Yeah, he was crazy. Like, when they could have, you know, had sane people actually doing it. But they ended up hiring this guy. He went crazy up in OVW and got released. Like, I forget the details of it, but he did some psycho stuff while he was there and ended up getting released.
Damn. Never knew that. Interesting.
Yep.
So
that's Bill DeMott's training for you, and threat assessment, hey, let's hire the crazy guy. Let's put him in the dub. Never made it out of OVW.
I'll be damned.
Yeah.
And you said this was before FCW, right?
This is before FCW.
Okay.
Like, all this
That's
happened before I got to FCW. This is when Deep South is still around.
That's
Bill
right.
DeMott was the head trainer at Deep South.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. Who came out of Deep South that did anything? The Miz? The Miz was a TV star. He was going to make it regardless. He damn sure didn't make it off Bill DeMott's training, in-ring training. Montel, our MVP, MVP was an internet or an indie star already, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He came up, MVP came up with MVP, the MVP gimmick. That wasn't a Deep South thing.
No, yeah, he said that too. I think that's all him.
All him. So I don't know of anybody that came out of Deep South that didn't go to FCW or wasn't an OVW product before. Tyson Kidd, Davey Boy Smith, OVW product.
What about Kofi?
Wasn't he Kofi in Deep South?
I thought so, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, he was in Deep South, but then he went to FCW.
Okay.
Kofi came out of FCW as well. That's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Who out of Deep South did they – Festus and Jesse? That was about the most over people that came out of Deep South.
Yeah, that's true. They were there. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty it's interesting.
I don't know anybody.
I can't. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody.
Angelina Love was in Deep South. You got Angelina Love, and you hurt her, and she gets released. How do you release Angelina Love, you know?
Yeah.
Who went on to become, like, a really big star in TNA.
Yeah,
his eye for talent is not that good.
That's what you're saying.
Angelina Love, you got her. Angel Williams, you had her. Broke her ankle and got rid of her. Doing some bullshit. And I think if you look up Angelina Love, I believe she got hurt doing some Bill DeMott exercise. Like, I mean, honestly, this exercise is total bullshit. There's some bullshit power plant bullshit, you know, like,
that
I'm pretty sure he can't even do half of. I mean, he's never really been a light on. I mean, besides the moonsault, I mean, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I will admit, I used to pop on that back in the day.
Moonsault was pretty cool. See a big guy that big doing it.
Yeah, he got that size.
I mean, look at Bam Bam Bigelow and Vader. So.
Yeah.
But
no, I hear
besides
you.
that was about it. So
well,
I don't really see it.
No, I'm glad you talked about it. Everybody gets to hear it here first, firsthand. I don't know how many people you've told the story to, and we'll see. But, yeah, I'm glad you told me about it. I've been wondering. You know, I kind of figured a lot happened, and you obviously wouldn't post that if you didn't feel a certain way. So you explained it here.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody gets to hear it.
I mean, I'm a Dr. Tom guy. I was at FCW, I was with Dr. Tom. And now Dr. Tom, he ain't no pushover. He ain't no super nice guy, you know, as far as in the ring and getting your job done. You know, you're going to tell it like it is. You're going to work. But at the same time, he realized – he's been around. He realized your body is a commodity. Oh, and I didn't even tell you this part. Your body's a commodity. You only got so many bumps you can do. You only got so much stuff you can do. And this is how you make your money, is with your body. So you have to respect
that, right?
Your body. You can't tear it up. You can't be doing stupid stuff. My mother's like, oh, well, why aren't you doing a shooting star press? Because I ain't getting paid enough to do a shooting star press and mess my knees up. You know, there's not enough people here for that. I can do a triple jump moonsault, but I do it in New Japan because there's 10,000 people on the show. I don't do it on the Indies because there's no need for it unless it's a big show or it's for a championship or something like that. But you got to respect your body. And Dr. Tom was really good about respecting the talent's body, looking out for injuries, not babying them, and going, hey, you don't have to do anything, but you got to look out for your body. And So after I leave that tryout with Bill DeMott in Florida, I brought my mom and my sister with me. They rode out with me because, you know, I rented a hotel. I had a pretty decent job. So it was off season, so I rented a hotel. It was in Destin. So we had a really nice hotel, and so they went and hung out on the beach, even though it was kind of stormy at that time. So it was off season. So they went and hung out and had a good time while I was doing the tryout. It was a little fun family trip. You know, we came in a day early, hung out, and then we're going to go back Sunday, and that way they could help me drive. And they spent the night at my house in Lafayette. Thank God they came, because I'm leaving. You know, I go to eat, me and Saxton and some of the guys, some of the local talent from Florida went and ate. And so I left. My mom came, picked me up in my car, went back to the hotel, went to sleep. I woke up. My legs were so stiff. Like, I couldn't – they were just super, super stiff. Like, it was hard. It didn't hurt to walk, but it was just hard to flex my knees. It was like my legs were full of, like, a balloon or a fluid or something. I couldn't figure out what it was. But I was like, man, I just overworked myself. And so my mom and sister drove the entire way back. And, you know, my sister, she was probably in 12th grade, 11th grade, something like that. Mm-hmm. She might have been in college. No, she was in college. Because she was in college. That's what she was. Maybe she had one more year left. And so they drove me back, and because I couldn't physically drive. It was just I probably could have, but it would have been painful. Just the switching of the feet once we got on the highway had been fine. But I got home, slept. They went on back to Shreveport, and I got up to go to work that morning. I went to use the restroom, went to pee. My urine was dark red. I'm pissing blood.
What?
I'm like, oh, my God. I'm telling you, my urine looked like cranberry juice, dark red. And so I'm like, oh, my God, I'm peeing blood. What the hell? Did I hurt my kidney? I didn't even take no big bumps. What's going
right,
on?
Right, right, right.
So I'm thinking something's wrong with my kidney or something. And I'm like, no. And, like, in the first, like you're peeing, and I pee blood, and I stop. I squeeze, and I stop myself. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh. And so I let it go.
Yeah, you start to panic kind of. I mean, it's like.
Yeah, I start to panic. You know, I'm like, oh, what is going on? And so I go again. I'm like, no, it's straight burgundy. I'm thinking I'm peeing blood. And, like I'm like, oh, my God. And so, thank goodness, I have really good health insurance working at the airport. Our health insurance was top-notch. And so I go around the corner to this doctor in River Ranch that I usually go to when I've got little minor injuries. They, you know, stitch me up, whatever, no problem. I pay the copay. So I go there, and he's like, what's the problem? I'm like, Doc, I'm peeing blood. He's like, you're what? I'm like, I'm peeing blood. And he was like, what happened? I was like, I don't know. I had a WWE, and I'm walking with a limp. I'm hurting to walk. They're not even open. When I went there, they're not even open there. So I sit in the parking lot for an hour waiting on them. And so I tell them what's going on. I limp into the bathroom. I pee in a cup. I mean, it is burgundy. Looks just like prune juice. Not prune juice, cranberry juice, pomegranate juice, something like that. I bring the plastic cup out. He looks at it. He's like amazed. And he's looking at it. He's like, because it's not like, you know, like he was like, you know, usually if you see some pee and blood, blood and urine, it's not this dark. You know, it you can see it, but it's not this dark. I'm talking, it is dark and full of it. And so he goes, he runs a few tests on it, and he was like, we got to get you to the hospital right now. And I'm like, why? What's going on? Am I going to die? Something wrong with my kidneys? He's like, nothing's wrong with your kidneys. When you went to that tryout, you overworked your body. And I was like, overwork my body. He's like, basically, you work your body to exhaustion. And your body, what you have is called, can't think, it's like, it says something phosphate can create, something phosphate kinosis is what it was. Uh-huh. And so what basically happened is doing all those hack squats and running and things like that, at some point, my body used up all the fuel it had. And I ate breakfast. I ate before I came there. drinking Gatorade. But basically,
what happened
is you used up all your energy, and your body didn't have any more ATP. It wasn't able to make any more ATP to keep you going, and you pushed past that point. And what your body did was it ate your muscle. So that's why your legs are so stiff. Your body ate itself so that you can continue going and so that you had energy to push past it. It's like you should have passed out, but instead of passing out, your body ate itself to keep itself going. And I'm like, this is crazy shit. I've never heard anything like this before. And he was like, what, that swelling you feel in your leg, all that is your body trying to get rid of the excess muscle fiber that has died because it ate itself. And so he's like, you can't, he's like your levels are so high right now, like just as what I've done in the lab here, your levels are so high that you cannot, your kidneys, you cannot drink enough water for your kidneys to filter this muscle fiber. What all this red stuff is, this is muscle cells floating around in your urine. And your kidney is trying to process this and get it out of your system. But you can't drink enough water for your kidneys to properly do this. So what we need to do is send you to the hospital, put an IV in you. So you're going to get fluid 100 continuously all throughout the day because you literally are running risk of your kidneys shutting down and you being on dialysis for the rest of your life. So I drive to the hospital. They check me in, put me in bed, and this is right before Christmas. And so I'm thinking I'm going to work. I'm calling my boss. Hey, boss, I can't come to work. Basically what happened, I'm explaining the story to him. And so the fire chief, my boss, they all came up to see me, came and checked on me and things and brought me stuff. But, like, I'm literally in the hospital because this motherfucker want me to do 1,000 hack squats and run up to the top of the Coliseum and back and push-ups, sit-ups, jumping jacks, all this shit that he ain't doing, that his guys and his trainees are not doing it with us to go, okay, well, this is enough. My body has ate itself, and I'm peeing muscle fiber. And, like, literally, it looks like a bowl, a cup of cranberry juice. That's how dark it was. And I stayed in the hospital all the way up to Christmas Eve. My girlfriend at the time, she was in school at McNeese State University in Lake Charles. And so she was out of school. She was going to go home. Instead, she came by and hung out with me and, you know, brought me things and just hung out with me. And I felt real bad for her that she had to stay in the hospital. She didn't have to. I told her, hey, you can go home, but she wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
You know, she was just that dedicated. And so she's like, no, I'm going to just stay and we're going to spend Christmas together. Got checked out of the hospital Christmas Eve. But, like, basically, like, my levels were off the chart for this creatine and cretate or something like that that was in my system.
Yeah.
That my kidneys just, they're like, if you hadn't came when you came, you would have been on dialysis, bro. It would have clogged your kidneys, and your kidneys would have ceased to function. And basically, I'm drinking water. I got an IV in me 24/7 for 3 to 4 days, and just in the hospital, just sitting there because I can't walk. I barely can walk, and kidneys.
That's unreal, man.
Really unreal. All for wrestling, all because of this dumb dude. But he's a dummy. In my opinion, that's just how I feel about him. He's a dummy. He shouldn't be training anybody. He shouldn't be over a program like that, a $1 million program where you're training an athlete whose body, this is your body, this is how you're going to make your living. Just like in football practice, don't sack the quarterback. You don't sack the quarterback. I don't care if you could have sacked him. I don't care whatever your reason is. You don't sack him because it's your quarterback. Touch him, whatever. Don't touch him. Just run up on him. Don't sack your quarterback because he's going to take enough sacks in the game, and he's not built for that. So protect him. You don't need to be getting hurt when there's a game. So same thing in training and stuff like that, you know. There's a difference between finding out if somebody's got the heart for it and trying to hurt them or trying to maim them or not knowing your job. You know, he don't know his job. I've got a degree in aviation management. I've got a minor in marketing. I know management. I know marketing. I know what I can and can't get away with. He don't have a degree in kinesiology. He don't have a degree in sports medicine. He don't know the freaking limits that you can push a body to and when to stop. At no point did I ever see him going around looking at people and going, hey, let me look at your eyes. Let me make sure, or let me see what your skin feels like. Are you clammy? I've been in the Army. I know heat exhaustion when I see it, you know. Be looking out for those, that when you're over somebody and you're training and that sort of situation. He's not that. He's that dude, when he gets fired, he's going to go work at UPS. He's going to work at FedEx, shipping boxes. That's what he's going to do. He's not going to go and get a job at a sports team or something doing that. He's just not that dude. And if you're going to be doing that sort of thing, you need to have those sorts of credentials to make sure something like that doesn't happen. But
all my listeners, the 20 I got right now, as I build this thing, I had a lot more downloads than 20. But man, y'all heard it here first, man. You heard the story, so and you heard what happened. You heard why Big Daddy Yum Yum feels the way he does about the issue and when it came out, like you said, what he said. So, man, that's all I got, man. You gave me a lot more time than I thought I'd get. So.
I'm a talker, man.
Man, that's cool, man. That'll work for me anytime, man. Anytime. Hang tight while I stop this thing and give me 1 second.
Hey, hold on. Tell the people where they can come find me.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, no. Yeah. Go ahead. You do it. Go ahead and plug it.
Okay. Well, all right, ladies, gentlemen, if you want to get know more about Big Daddy Yum Yum, the man who's so magically delicious, 256 gallons of pure milk chocolate, drowning these ladies in chocolate, go to at BigDaddyYum_Yum on both Instagram and Twitter. You want to find me on Facebook, type in Byron Wilcott. I'm the only one in the whole wide world. There's only one Byron Wilcott, WILCOTT. Also, Google Big Daddy Yum Yum. I'm on there. You can find me on Google as well. Check me out on YouTube. And also check out the main company that I work for, Main Event Pro Wrestling. The hottest wrestling show in the South, MainEventProWrestling.com. If you want to check out some of our sister companies, go to Lone Star Championship Wrestling. Also check out Smash Mouth Professional Wrestling out of Dallas, Texas. Lone Star's in Houston, Texas. Google either one of those. Check me out. I'm there every show.
Yep, I appreciate it, man. Thanks again for coming on. Again, that's if you missed it, that was at BigDaddyYum_Yum. So I hope I don't have to spell it for you, but that's at BigDaddyYum_Yum on Twitter and on Instagram, as Big Daddy Yum Yum just said. And man, look, I appreciate it. I really do, man. Taking the time,
I appreciate you having
with me. And man, I'll bring you back on, man, because I know you got a lot to talk about, man. You like to talk, like you said.
Sure, we can chop it up anytime.
All right, Booking the Territory fans. Holy shit, what a conversation that Big Daddy Yum Yum and I had about Byron Wilcott. I got Doc Turner here. He's out of town again. That some bitch is always out of town, but that's another story. So he couldn't be in studio with me. So we're doing this thing over the phone as usual, it seems. Doc, how you doing first?
Well, I'm in an undisclosed villa on the south of France, but man, oh man, Big Daddy, that was some explosive audio right there. What a listen.
Yeah, I think when he called Bill D'Amato shit trainer, I think everybody will pop on that, but that's just my opinion, so... but needless to say, that was pretty impressive, the conversation he and I had. And I just want to publicly over the podcast just tell him again, thank you for being being so honest and open about the issue, because the bottom line is it takes a pair of stones to get on a you know, a podcast and radio show and just speak your mind like that, because we all know for everything you say there could always be repercussions. So anyway.
Hey, Bill DeMott, if you want to come on and tell your side of the story, we'd be happy to have you. Equal time.
Yeah, I actually, you haven't heard that part yet, but I did say that in the very beginning of the show before I threw it into the interview when I recorded it, pre-recorded. And I said, hey, you know, I believe everything Byron had to say because Byron has been a friend of mine for a long time, and I have no doubt he speaks the utmost truth on the issue, on what happened. And I don't know Bill DeMott. I'm going to say it again. I have no clue who he is. I mean, I know who he is, but I don't know him as a person. But if Bill DeMott ever wants to come on this show, I would be more than happy to have him. So if anybody out there knows him and he wants to come on, by all means, the door is always open. And he can come on here and curse me out all he wants, but I'm just saying the door is open.
It's fun, Bill DeMott. You should try it. I'm getting ready to do it for the next 45 minutes.
So, needless to say, you're a little pissed off this week, ain't you? So I've been hearing that. I've been seeing some thoughts on you on social media, and a mutual friend of ours says you're a little pissed off. So go ahead.
Man, I am fucking hotter than a thousand suns. Let me tell you something right now, DeAndre Jordan. I am what you call and what Mark Cuban calls a Maverick fan for life, MFFL. So you worthless piece of shit can tuck your tail between your legs and drag it back to L.A. Here's the problem, you gutless piece of crap. It's not that you're gone and I have to watch Zaza Pachulia now man the center of my team. It's that you tied up our time and money when we could have been out pursuing other free agents to build a team around an aging superstar who took less money to facilitate us chasing pieces of shit such as yourself. So you can go back to L.A. and take Doc Rivers and J.J. Redick and Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, and you know what y'all can do? Y'all can get the biggest bowl you can find and get your spoons around it and all eat a big bowl of dick. I'm done with all you sons of bitches. And I wouldn't expect you, I hear you laughing, mean Mike, I wouldn't expect you to understand. You follow a piece of trash franchise like the Pelicans, lucky to win 43 games. You don't know anything about basketball. Y'all are too busy down there partying on Bourbon.
You can kiss my ass. You can kiss my ass because next year y'all going to do the job to us. That's all I'm going to say.
We're
going to do the job.
Years.
Well, hey, well, if you want to give us that, yeah, years. Yeah, years then.
So we got to stop talking years. About basketball before I have a stroke. Let's talk about some wrestling. God damn.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I'm really happy because we're getting a lot of reader follower feedback and Facebook feedback. So I'm finally getting – we're really getting a bunch of questions, and I got more than we can probably go through this week, which is a good problem to have. So I just want to thank everyone. If I miss your name, don't shoot me. We had Kevin sent us something. We had a Sharon sent us something. We had a guy named Jason send us something. All kind of folks send us questions. So I just want to give some shout-outs to them. And with that being said, we'll get started.
Hold on. Let me see if I can answer these. Yes, maybe, false. No, The Undertaker shouldn't have lost at WrestleMania. Yes, I think. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just trying to.
No, asshole. No. These are legit, really, really good questions. So let me throw the first one at you before we get into the weekend review because – I don't want to harp on things, but 3 hours of Raw, yeah, no thank you. Except for that last match, we'll talk about that. So Kevin wants to know, he says he was referencing the Kingdom and Adam Cole and what's going to happen with that as far as what happened at the end of Ring of Honor this week. And I think he also will address another question too while we're talking about this. He also asked about the thoughts on Okada and – got it now. Roderick Strong. So go ahead and give me your thoughts first on the Kingdom and Adam Cole and what looks like dissension there. I mean, he flat out walked off without him. So, yeah.
Yeah. At the end of last week's Ring of Honor match, after they lost to Red Dragon and Michael Elgin, he didn't leave with the kingdom. And so what do I think about it? I'll be real honest with you. I'm getting up to speed on this product because I didn't have access to it for its entire history up until the last few months. What I think is, when I look at that roster, I think it's an okay move for Adam Cole. First of all, he tore down the house with AJ Styles on last week's program, and that kind of also showed a little bit of a face turn for him. And I do think that the roster definitely is a little heel-heavy when I look at it. And so right now, as you see, some of the best in the world with New Japan, a lot of the big matches, the faces have been from New Japan. So I think it's a good move. I'm really intrigued by the more I see the Kingdom. Certainly always intrigued by Maria, but Bennett and Tavern are good. And so hopefully this will be another feud that that'll be interesting to watch. But I don't have any problem with it at all.
Yeah, I think what Kevin was asking at is, and I'm reading into this because, you know, you only have so many characters on Twitter. He kind of asked, I guess, what the thoughts were on the breakup, and I'm assuming the direction of it. I mean, the guy is Adam Cole. He's always been able to stand on his own. So, I mean, when I look at it, I'm like, yeah, he'll break away. I think it's obvious he breaks away. Now, what they're doing with it, man, that's a good question. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I don't
–
I mean,
from what
really weird.
From what I understand, he and O'Reilly were a tag team many, many years ago, so there's a history there, and as they kind of fought last week and he shook hands and stayed with them in the ring. So, I mean, there's a lot that could be drawn upon as they kind of make the switch.
I'll tell you one thing about what I saw. They went really old school in a Bill Watts-type approach from Mid-South years ago. Do you know what I'm talking about at the very end of that? At the very end of the show?
No, because I watched. I only got to see Mid South in rare moments. I mostly got to see
World Class. So, and when I talk about, so what they did was, Kevin Kelly, when the crap was hitting the fan, this was classic Bill Watts from back in the day. When the crap was starting to hit the fan, that's when he's like, "All right, fans, we're out of here. Be back next week. We got to see it all going on." And you know, just when everything's breaking down. And there's no answer. It's like a feeder into, all right, come back next week. Look, we're hot. This is it. So it was just really old school as far as the way they went off the air. And I really, really love that. I mean, that's like they did the same thing in World Class back in the day. Well, it was the same type of – like they give you something to feed on right at the very end, and it's like – you know, Cole raises O'Reilly's hand, and then he leaves with him, and then Kevin Kelly is screaming, "All right, fans, just make sure you come back next week. What does all this mean?" That's what he said. He goes, "What does this mean?" when they're going off the air. So it's just like, you know, they set that hook, trying to make sure they're reeling you in for next week's episode. I really like the way they did that. That was really good production on their part.
The other thing I would do if I was ROH is that I'd be making sure that I had plenty of a pretty strong pipeline of ready now superstars, you know, like maybe an Adam Cole, because I have a feeling that as these guys continue to build this brand, Triple H and NXT are going to continue to try to pick them off. And, you know, that was one of the things that happened with ECW is you could replace them for so long. But sooner or later, it gets harder and harder to build those stars and keep that pipeline when they're getting pinched off. So,
well, when they were taken at the rate that they were taken, I mean, it's one thing to take bits and pieces, but if you're taking huge pieces, you know, all the time, eventually the well starts to run dry and it's not getting you can't keep up with the replenishment process of it quick enough. So that could be an issue, although. You know, let's remember the Briscoes turned WWE down from the reports I've heard a while back. So, man, I'd actually love to see that. I'd love to see guys say, you know what? No, we like it here and keep building that ROH brand because I really enjoy ROH. I'm on the fence. I almost wish they'd do 2 hours, but at the same time, I'm good with the one.
I'm telling you, they can pack almost as much wrestling in 1 hour. Certainly, than TNA can in 2, and almost as much as Raw can in 3.
I agree. No, I agree. Hey, so what do you think? The other question Kevin asked was about Strong versus Okada coming up in August. What are your thoughts on that? Well, let me say this. I'll tell you what I'll give you mine first. Okada just got that belt back. Besides me going, it's going to be a spectacular match because everything I see Okada do is just, you know, magic. I don't think he loses to Strong. I just don't see it. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a tendency to, as much as it pains me right now, to agree with you. I think I have to. I think Okada is a bankable star, and it's time for them to start building around him.
That dude, I would not want to see this, but if he got the right push in WWE, man, he'd be printing money, brother, printing it.
Well,
TNA
has Okada and did exactly what TNA does with talent.
No, of course. TNA had AJ Styles as well, Samoa Joe. I mean, TNA's had everyone, and they've done nothing but put their foot in their ass and screw them over. So that's another topic for another day, though. We'll leave that alone. So next question. Sharon, or spelled Sheron, and Sharon, if I'm saying it wrong, my apologies, because I've been exchanging with you on Twitter lately, and you're a really cool cat. He actually writes for BeyondTheRopes.com. Really good writer, does some good articles for WWE and whatnot. It's interesting stuff. So he asked, want to get your thoughts on the return of Rusev and his direction going forward. But let me answer that. Besides the Cena segment with Cesaro this week, I love the Rusev segment with Ziggler, because I was all against Lana turning baby and lining up with Ziggler, but the way they did it this week with Rusev, and they put Summer Rae with him, which, if you want to, you talk about Natty Neidhart looking like a dude. I mean, god damn, Summer Rae is one ugly chick. She just don't do nothing for me. I love it because she looks like a heel, and he's a badass heel, and his direction going forward is going to be extremely fun to watch. What do you think?
I think I've said it at least. I say a lot of shit, so it's hard to keep up with it all. But I think I said this last week that I don't like Sad Rusev. I think that's a silly, silly character. And so I think he got his swerve back on in a heelish way by that move he pulled on Ziggler. I if it were me and I was booking this territory, I would have had this culminate in a match where Lana swerved and turned back and aligned herself back with Rusev, because I think it's fun with her as a heel as well with him. But I think the WWE is seeing dollar signs in their eyes when it comes to her, and that ain't going to happen. So I'm for it, man. I'm for Rusev just balling out and being a heel and just going after it. The question I have for you is, you know, That move with the crutch that supposedly, you know, Ziggler did the stretcher job out. How?
Yeah.
You know, it's a work. I get it. But there seemed like there could be a lot of things that go wrong with that. Did you see that, and what were your thoughts? And did you think, you know, it was a little dangerous, especially for WWE to try to pull off?
It kind of made me pause in my mind for a second.
And I just mean that you could slip, whatever. You've got gravity and implements around your throat. That can be serious business. So
yeah. Well, I mean, anything could be serious business. I mean, you could take a wrong step, and you see people get hurt all the time. So no, I was. It made me take a step back and go, it suspended my, you know, thought process and going, could he possibly, I mean, it's possible that it could have been legit, but yeah, going back to the original question, I love the direction as far as what they're going to do. what I don't want to see with those four, I don't want to see some stupid mixed tag, I can tell you that much. I want
and
to see a program.
I guarantee you that's coming.
And that's what I don't want to see because Summer Rae can't wrestle.
Well, neither can Lana. The two of them stood there face-to-face the other night trying to take off their high heels, and they couldn't even get – neither one of them could get their high heels off. How are they going to work in the ring?
Yeah, I don't have a clue, but I can sit there and tell you I do want to see – I don't want to see some stupid mixed tag. So to answer the question, the direction I see is we'll see them work a really good program, maybe a long one. Maybe it'll go like as long as the Cena one did, which – you know, look back at that. Those matches where he was feuding with Cena, I mean, they were really good. There was, you know, Cena did what he does best, elevates his competition, and puts on a great show. And I just see Rusev and Ziggler as two people who can really work, you know, doing the same thing. I see a long program. They can get a couple of pay-per-views out of it. Just keep the two ladies out of the ring. In my opinion, I just can't say that enough. Keep those two away from me. I mean, they can catfight. You know what I mean by catfight. Get a little mix up, but I don't want to see them as part of some stupid mix tag. That just ain't going to work for me. That just ain't going to work for me.
Me either.
Okay. So moving right along to the next question. We've kind of touched on this in previous weeks. What are your thoughts on what appears to be so many options? This is from Jason. What are your thoughts on what appears to be so many options for the boys these days and the WWE actually getting shunned by the talent? And the examples given that I can think of, this isn't what the listener sent me, but what Jason sent is people like John Morrison. I know I heard recently that he had thought about coming back but ended up not. And we know the Briscoes turned them down. What are your thoughts on that? I'll throw it at you since I've taken the last two and answered first, I believe.
Well, you hear guys that were in the business that have podcasts, wrestling podcasts, and if a guy like Stone Cold or JR or all these guys say they want these companies in business because it's more jobs for the workers, then, you know, why would I think any different? So, I mean, obviously having these groups running and healthy is a good thing. You know, I think when you look at a place like the WWE, it is a corporation. First and foremost, it is a corporation. And so you're going to have some people that go there and thrive, and you're going to have aspiring wrestlers that want to go there and try to thrive. And you're going to have other people that know before they ever step foot in there, this is not for me. You're going to have people that think it's the dream and get there and realize this isn't what I wanted it to be. So anybody who says, I want to look at that, whether they've been there or not, and says it's not for me, Godspeed. I hope that you can make your career, whether it's in TNA or Global or Indies or ROH or New Japan, wherever it is, it's just good that you don't have to necessarily play the WWE game.
Yeah, I agree. And from everything that I've heard and articles I've read and interviews that I've listened to, let me tell you, there's a lot of guys out there. I talked to Manimal last week, and he's going to be on the show in the future. These guys are making, he hasn't even been in WWE, but there's plenty of guys out there, indie guys, who are now making a living as pro wrestlers without the WWE name. And it wasn't like that 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And so I think that's nothing but positive. I look around too, and I see a lot of these indie shows. Social media has helped indie shows out tremendously. I've spoken to this before, I believe. These indies now have an outlet with social media to where people can see the product, maybe not on a national TV level, but on the internet, and they can become familiar with these athletes before going to shows so they know who they are. Now, is it the same build as a WWE or even a ROH or TNA? No, not really. But the fact is these guys are getting their names out there, and they're more noticeable in more places than just the small towns that they may be working in. What that does is then you have another effect of that. You have, with social media, you can get more name recognition out there with your promotion. So you have these posters and they're all out and you got fans coming to shows. You do bring in Now, you can bring in more big names because you're drawing bigger crowds because advertising basically isn't as expensive because half the time you can do it on social media for free. So you're seeing a lot of the former WWE, TNA, ROH guys who are now earning a lot of money on indies because there's the indies now with drawing better crowds can pay these guys and bring in more talent. I mean, there was a group up in Oklahoma, Imperial Wrestling Revolution. I showed you the card. I mean, they had Kevin Nash on it. They had Chavo Guerrero on it. They had John Morrison on it, or Mundo, whatever the heck he's going by now. Who else was on that card? I mean, there was four or five legit WWE guys. They got a card coming up in August that's got the Dudleys on it. I mean, so all of these things make it a lot easier for guys who are no longer in WWE or guys who may be in ROH and TNA who can take these indie bookings, and they're saying, no, thank you. I can make more on my own. I can do it better on my own.
And, Mike, let me tell you this, because, you know, we both work in our own way for a large corporation. And you know what? The WWE is a corporation. And I can tell you that the environment in a corporation is this. When you work for a corporation and you're not at the top of the pyramid, there's going to be several, if not numerous, people telling you what to do. Hey, we saw it this week, and whether it's real or not, it feels real, that the list of pages that came out of Vince's notes to the announcers, that's the kind of thing that happens when you work for a big corporation. And you know what?
Yep.
Like I said before, there are people that operate that, and it goes off their back like water off a duck's back. And there's other mm-hmm. people that getting told that they have to do anything, their first reaction is fuck off. And if that's your reaction,
yep.
I guarantee you, you're not going to thrive in the WWE. So, I mean, you know, I think it's fantastic to see guys like the Briscoes say thanks, but no thanks, because I've said this before. I think if the Briscoes went to WWE, they'd be the Bushwhackers inside of 10 days.
Yep, they'd be licking people's heads. Licking people's heads. So, totally agree. We're on the same page as usual, which I hate agreeing with you. Next question. This one's from Joe. Joe asked, with Finn now getting the NXT title at Beast in the East, how much longer before Finn goes to the main roster? Actually, I saw this question from a few different people. And does it mean Kevin Owens is definitely going to win the U.S. title at Battleground? Let me give my thoughts and I'll get yours. With Finn now going to NXT, I actually had a Twitter person send me that after Beast in the East, how much longer before he goes to the main roster. I said 6 to 12 months, but to be honest with you, NXT is turning into its own brand, own big, large brand in itself. So it wouldn't surprise me as that continues to grow if it's much longer than 6 to 12 months. And what I mean is NXT has basically become what I guess SmackDown was years ago, which is nothing but an extension of the larger WWE. And, I mean, they're touring now. They're going into these bigger arenas going forward, from what I gather. I don't think Finn has to go anywhere. Sure. And who's to say they don't bring him up every now and then to the main roster like they did with Owens? I mean, Owens has been going up there for a few months now as the NXT champ. So I don't know. I can't answer that question. I'll say 6 to 12 months, but that's if it was based on NXT still just working out of Orlando. If they go full scale and they're doing a lot more touring, he's going to be there longer than 6 to 12 months.
It's more complicated than that, Mike. It is based on the whims of a about-to-be-70-year-old man that if he decides tomorrow Finn Balor's up, he's up. And if he decides he's not, he's not. And I think it's almost that simple.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Couldn't disagree there. Second part of that question said, and does it mean Kevin Owens is definitely going to win the U.S. title at Battleground? Oh, my God, I'm so iffy on that one. You know what's funny? Last week I talked about, you know, winning and losing and does it really matter? It doesn't matter.
We made a prediction off of a listener question last week about this. So it matters to me.
Well, okay, that part, man. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is, it doesn't matter if he wins or loses. he's over. Does he win? Nah, he probably. Who knows? They could use. They could, you know, go another route with Cena, but I don't think it matters. I don't. So the question asks, it doesn't mean he's definitely going to win the U.S. title at Battleground. If you ask me that, no.
All right.
It doesn't mean he's definitely going to win it. Do you think he's definitely going to win it?
I think he definitely wins it because I think, and I don't care. Again, this goes back to not how I'm booking this territory, because Vince doesn't call me, even though he has my personal cell number. But I think they think Owens needs it more than Cena. And I think they can, even though Cena has done a good job of propping up this title over the last few months, I think they drop it and Owens takes it. I want to say something about when does Finn Balor come up? Because I agree with you. I don't think he comes up anytime soon, but I certainly think he should, because here's why. I watched Raw laying in bed Monday night with a terrible, vicious stomach flu-ish type thing. And so I sat there and watched it live, which only made the stomach flu that much worse, because I can't tell you how long 3 hours and 15 minutes is when you don't feel good and you cannot fast forward this bullshit. But I'm going to tell you this. In 3 hours and 15 some odd minutes, there were 16 wrestlers that participated in 7 matches in 3 hours. 7 matches in 3 hours, 16 wrestlers. And I said, I only care about 4. If you really want me to be generous, 5 of those wrestlers. So am I ready to get some infusion of talent from NXT up on the main roster? Yes, I am.
Infusion of talent is not going to help what you're describing, though. You do realize that, right?
Well, is or isn't it? Because, and I don't want to segue off the question until we're done, and I don't want to segue away from another question, but it sure seems like Cesaro is grabbing every brass ring that's out there.
Well, that some bitch been grabbing brass rings, but them friggin' idiots up there just don't want to see it. They just don't want to believe that. I don't know what their problem is. The dude's been talented. I mean, this is nothing new. What you've seen the last 2 weeks on Raw with him and Cena is nothing new. Nothing new. There's nothing new to that. He's been talented. I told you when they put those two together that when they put him and Kid together, it was going to be magic. No, you got a thing against Kid, Nighthawk, and Natty for some strange reason. I don't know what. But I told you that when they put them together. And now he's doing it on his own, so I'm not shocked.
Those two guys went 31 minutes on the Raw main event the other night. Pretty impressive. Here, you're talking about we spent the last few minutes talking about the WWE mindset. And this show is called Booking the Territory. So I got a question here that I watched that match that I wanted to ask is, it's a question that kind of leads to a second question. So it is, as I'm watching it, I wrote this down. I said, what if they had Cesaro win this match and win the title from Cena and throw intrigue into the whole angle with Owens and the next pay-per-view, and not have it necessarily go to a three-way dance? And even if this is a bad idea, which is mine, so it's not, does anybody in WWE ask these kinds of what-if scenarios, or does Vince just say, this is how we're booking it, and everybody else just goes, okay, Vince?
Well, you got one more Monday before Battleground. You got one more Monday. Don't forget that. So anything can happen. Anything can happen. That would shock me. I don't necessarily know if I like that idea right now, only because you got so much going on with Owens and Cena. And just because you tease it like the way they did. I mean, there was a couple times where I'm looking at Cesaro going, man, are they going to do a title change, even though we already knew? Because, see, you always want to swerve somebody, right? You want to you'll have that announced, that matchup announced. But hey, what better way than to throw fans off than going, well, this matchup's announced at Battleground, but dang, the titles change hands, and holy crap, we got something else now going on. So
here's the thing.
Wouldn't shock me, but it would, I guess.
But here's the difference, and here's why you and I consistently come on here and talk about certain shows being good and other shows not. You watch that New Japan show, they had four matches in an hour, and granted it was a lot of highlights, and it was from the G1 in 2014, but they had three of those four matches that ended in what I would call surprise finishes. And in that 1 hour of wrestling, you saw AJ Styles get beat, Okada get beat, and Tanahashi get beat. Now, I would argue that in some level, in some order, that's three of the four biggest stars in that promotion. Maybe Nakamura, who was also on that show and won, but being the top four, three of them got pinned.
Hey, refresh my memory. Were those clean finishes?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's why, to refresh my memory. And again, that keeps you from not thinking you know what's going to happen. Because, see, that's always my biggest problem on Raw on Monday nights is, you know, I know what's going to happen already. That's been my problem with TNA the last 2 weeks. I know what's going to happen already. So,
right.
Yeah, I think your original question – go ahead.
You know, and so, you know, if Carl Anderson, who I like, and he's a good wrestler, fights Okada on WWE, 9.8 times out of 10 – Okada is going to beat Carl Anderson, and that point two that he doesn't is going to have some sort of interference.
Yeah. You're comparing two different products, though. That's where you hear the hesitation in my voice. I mean, you're looking at New Japan versus WWE.
Right, because I'm comparing wrestling and sports entertainment.
I mean, we're talking about two different animals. Actually, you want to know, if for people who wouldn't be a wrestling fan, you want to know the comparison you just made. You just compared the NFL to some high school football league. That's a good league, but you may have some – those high school kids may not be as good, but they're passionate. They're damn passionate. They love that game. They're playing it for free. So anyway, my point is apples to oranges. Sports entertainment one is actually wrestling, where guys are in there killing each other. All right, so are we done with that question, or you got anything else to add to the whole Kevin Owens?
Let's keep going.
All right. Anthony wants to know the Cena Ziggler versus Kane Barrett match at the end of Beast in the East was stupid. What do you think? So I don't think you got to see it because you don't have the network, and only occasionally you'll catch network stuff. So I will tell you this. The guy says, what did you think? It was stupid. Yeah, it was very stupid. It was pretty much done for the Japanese audience because, you know, they needed a way to roll Cena out there. And I'm not mad at them for that because you got to remember, although it was called Beast in the East, you were pretty much watching a WWE live event and not really any type of special, whether it be a pay-per-view or a Raw. So the Japanese fans, you know, who a lot of them were Cena fans, they needed something to do to mix in a couple of guys. And, I mean, you had four really good workers in there, but there was no storyline. There was no reason for, like, a U.S. fan to care about it because there was no angle. There was nothing that we were invested in. You know, JR always says that all the time. Give me a reason to want to watch it. Give me a reason. And, well, I don't know if you really gave him a reason to want to see, you know, those four guys go at it. So I don't think – you didn't see it, right?
No.
Okay. So trust me when I tell you, I'm not going to expect you to comment.
It doesn't sound stupid. Yeah, it doesn't
sound stupid. No, there's no story behind it. So, Anthony, you're right. I agree with you. There was no story behind it. So, hey, here's one we can debate, though, you and I, because I want to see what you come up with. So Ronald wants to know, and he says, seriously, who on the roster is a believable challenger to Brock? Who, and I assume he means who on the current roster. So let's not talk about NXT, and let's assume Kevin Owens is called up at this point. You want me to go first, or you want to go first?
You can go first.
Okay, so who on the roster is a believable challenger to Brock? Okay, I'll list this. I got Cena being as a believable challenger, And when we say challenger, someone who's not going to get out there and get thrown around like a rag doll and could legitimately beat Brock.
Yeah,
I think Cena.
Fans, these are legitimate questions from legitimate listeners that I have legitimately not heard, so I'm writing my list down too. So I'm making my list real quick as you're talking.
Okay, so this is just, I'm thinking off the top of my head real quick because I hadn't given it a lot of thought. I just you know, took it down from the inbox. I'm looking at it now. I got Cena as one. I do believe Seth Rollins as a heel, and I stress as a heel because, remember, a true heel does dirty things to defeat a babyface. So that's why I say he's believable. I think you can throw Kevin Owens into that mix now. And I think you can throw Cesaro into that mix as far as believable, can get in there, go toe-to-toe with Brock. I believe Roman Reigns is still in there. Even though he went to Suplex City, I don't think he ended up looking weak in the WrestleMania main event. So I got Cena in no particular order. I got Cena, Rollins, Owens, Cesaro definitely, and then I got Roman Reigns. Now that's just five off the top of my head. Other than that, those are the most believable. What do you think?
Well, the first thing I want to know, are we talking about just physically that if he stood across the corner, across the ring, it wouldn't be, you know, it's not the Lucha Dragons or El Torito from that perspective?
who has
a storyline that's legitimately hot enough to get him in there?
Well, so, yeah, see, when you start talking storylines, you can craft a storyline to make it believable. So, for most people. So I'm not really stressing storyline-wise. The only one I'm stressing storyline-wise is Seth Rollins, and that's because they're in the middle of the storyline more than anything. But I'm just talking about bottom line, staying toe-to-toe believably.
I think there's more than you think, and here's my shot. I agree with you on your five, although I have two tiers here. I have, in my incredibly quick note-making here, in my beautiful mind, I have 10 people total that could get believably into a ring with Brock. The top five would be Reigns, Cesaro, Cena. I think you physically could put Big Show or Kane in there with him, although Kane is starting to get on the upper limits of where he might want to not want to take that ass whooping at his age, but could stand across the ring and it wouldn't be a laugh just from the tail of the tape. Then I have five people on that second tier, which are Rollins, Owens, Bray Wyatt, eventually, maybe not today, but I think he's close. Rusev would be big enough to get in there and tangle with him, and if he would stop skipping to the ring and being so positive, I think Big E could probably get in there as well.
Huh. I didn't think about Big E, and I don't know why Rusev slipped my mind, but yeah, I would agree with that. I can't go with Big E, though.
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, all 10 of these sons of bitches are going to get thrown around like a sack of potatoes, but that's neither here nor there.
No, my point is believable, because I think what WWE ran into when Brock was the champion at WrestleMania was, at least the impression I got from all the WWE fans was, God, nobody can – who's going to beat this guy? Like, I can't tell you how many times I would hear that on different shows, and, you know, you're watching programming, and it's like, you know, and I mean, look, Brock's a legit badass, so I can see why people would think that way.
Well, if you're going to talk about just from a storyline who I think can get in there and make it believable, the only guy of those 10 that I just said would be Cena. Because one of the reasons Lesnar looks so just unbeatable today is because Cena helped make him look that way.
Right, the guy that they said has got an attitude and doesn't deserve what he has. Okay, yeah. That's always been my point with him. The dude will get in there and do anything for anybody, but people don't like him. They scream, John Cena sucks. I don't get it. I'll never get it. I just won't. Hey, would you believe we're 40 minutes into this puppy and we finally got through the questions?
All right. Well,
go ahead. You got some hot takes from this week that you need to comment on, don't you? Or you got some stuff you want to get off your chest?
Hold on a second. Before we hit that, I just wanted to ask you, and this is kind of a piggyback to our last question there on who fights Lesnar. it's pretty clear when you watched Raw from Chicago that Lesnar is either three quarters of the way through or completely through, depending on how you want to gauge it, his babyface turn. And they kicked off Raw with him coming out with Heyman, and Heyman got out there and did Paul Heyman thing and told Seth Rollins that Brock Lesnar was the Lord Almighty, the Lord thy God. Let's see here. I got it written down because this is good. I didn't want to forget this. He said, "You're going to learn the hard way that Brock Lesnar is the Lord thy God. Hallowed be thy name." And then after saying all the things he's not a lord of, like a god of peace or a god of forgiveness, he said Brock is a god of violent retribution. So this way, so again, it's just the genius of Paul Heyman being Paul. But I wrote this question, and it, so here's a listener question, because I listen to this podcast, and I got a damn question. Can Paul Heyman stay with Brock if Brock is going to be a babyface, or does Paul need to move on and take on somebody else?
No, he can't. He can for the time being because he's Paul Heyman, and the world we live in nowadays will always cheer for him. Well, not always, but at this point in time, we'll stay on his side. I mean, he's over. You know, anytime he goes Brock, you know, in the crowd saying it with him, Lesnar in there popping with him. Yeah, he will. I don't see why not. But I do think that's where the creative team up there needs to be smart, and they need to listen to the fans. If they start to see some type of, you know, change in the reception that he's getting, then they need to be ready to react to that. Maybe not initially, but they just still need to keep their minds open to it. That's my thoughts on that. But, yes, he can stay a babyface. You got to remember, man, Paul Heyman is the mastermind of ECW. Even as a heel, he is over to me as a face and always will be. Just my opinion. I just don't see people taking a dump on him. I mean, even when Brock was a heel, he was getting over as a face, even before he did the turn. So, yeah, long story short, yes. I do believe so.
Hey, did we make it through all the review section without having to talk about that bullshit that happened on Wednesday night with TNA Impact?
I think so, man. I really didn't want to talk about it. I mean, the only thing that caught my attention was God, TNA just pissing me off because I want to see him succeed. I sound like JR always, but I do. I want to see him succeed, but they're just making me so mad. Like, it's me. Like, I can't buy into what they're doing right now because all of this was taped prior to what happened at the so-called paper they had. I'm just not buying into it. And then everybody that's there is now really gone. Like, Austin Aries is supposedly doing ROH now, and, you know, Bobby Roode, we know he's gone, essentially gone, although maybe not really because – they're with Jarrett's Global, and we know what that's going to mean when it gets rebranded, because Jarrett basically said this week, oh, yeah, there's definitely a future as long as it aligns with what Global wants to do and whatnot. So I don't know, man. I just can't. It's like I'm watching it now waiting for the announcement. I'm just waiting for the announcement to happen, you know, that they're going to be blended and going to go from there. That's what I'm waiting on at this point.
I don't care when it was taped. I don't care how to sequence it was. I don't care who works for the company and who doesn't. That 2 hours of TV the other night was god-awful and shameful.
Stupid, huh?
It was terrible, and it was the same night it was coming down that poor piece of shit. DeAndre Jordan was reneging on his deal from the Maverick, so I ended up just turning it off.
Pissed you off, huh?
A little bit.
Got you a little mad?
Yeah. You know what else has me mad?
What's that?
This week, we had a presidential candidate tell us something, Mike. What do you think this presidential candidate told people like you and me?
That we need to work longer hours?
That we need to work more hours. So I'm not going to come out here and say this is a – I'm going to – say this candidate is good and this candidate is bad, but I'm going to tell you this thing, one thing right now. Jeb Bush better pull his head out of his ass real quick, because the problem here is not hardworking Americans that are already working too many hours and more hours than any other civilized, industrialized nation in the world. The problem is guys like him that are rich assholes that all of a sudden need 3 to 5% growth this quarter to make their stocks bounce. So you better get your shit in check, Jeb. I'm putting Jeb Bush on the short leash that I usually reserve to put you on, Mike.
You ain't putting me on no goddamn leash. Shut your ass up. I ain't never been on no leash around here. I run this motherfucker. Don't you ever get that twisted. All right. So you got that off your chest?
Yeah. God.
You feeling better? You feeling better? I mean, no?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm still hot.
You still hot? Well, what the hell are we going to do then? What can make you not be hot?
If we can get Roddy Piper and Stone Cold Steve Austin to a
holy shit
WrestleMania.
God damn, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm so glad. So before we wrap this puppy up this week, even though we're running long, no shit, man. So did you figure out? I want to see if you know. Did you figure out what you think Steve Austin was mad about? What Roddy Piper said, or I'm sorry, what Will Sasso said? When he was mocking him? No clue? Bueller?
The one thing
it's
I thought
okay.
was that I thought that the actual thing that would have made him the maddest was that he built a career off three words.
I don't think that was it. He said, okay, so I listened to it again because I wanted to hear, like, what the hell? You know, I was like, what the fuck is he pissed off about? And he made a comment about China, and he said something about breaking down the walls of China. If you go back and listen to it, he says something about breaking down the walls of China. And for some reason, I think that's what sent Stone Cold over the edge. Because, like, what's being reported is there was evidently some truth, because Sasso supposedly was a friend. I'd say he is, but was a friend of Austin's.
Yeah,
so,
I heard that.
I think it might have been the China comment, because he really didn't say nothing else. Everything else was just a mockery of him, unless he just pissed off that he was mocking him. You know, he was imitating him. Other than that, I don't think.
But you know what is bullshit out of this whole thing is Roddy Piper saying this was out of love. He was pulling a rib on poor Jim Duggan, and Jim Duggan had no clue.
Holy shit, fucking Duggan went.
Now you can say that it, I'm not saying it was hateful. I'm just saying it was a good joke, but good jokes don't come out of love. I mean, come on.
Dude, that was fucking awesome. I was bopping on that. Duggan was hook, line, and sinker, dude.
We're kind of having an inside conversation here. So in case that you've been living under a rock or you don't have a smartphone or whatever they call it, you don't listen to other podcasts, which you shouldn't, but you need to go out and just Google Roddy Piper, and it'll bring up all the stories. But Roddy Piper had comedian Will Sasso on. He did an impersonation of Stone Cold Steve Austin. They kind of punked Jim Duggan throughout all that. Stone Cold got mad, said, hey, you got to bring this podcast down. Went to podcast one, said, bring it down. As a result, Piper says he was fired. Stone Cold says he didn't get him fired, and Piper's on a different provider now. So that gives you the 30-second catch-up. You know, the truth of the matter is that these two old guys like to tell it hard scrabble how it used to be. And you talk about how Johnny Valentine and then would bring shotguns into the dressing room as ribs. These two dancies are getting upset over an impersonation and name calling. They both need to grow a pair. I realized I just told Roddy Piper and Stone Cold Steve Austin that they both need to grow a pair.
Yeah, you did.
I told you the problem with all of this. Roddy Piper, and I say this without any sort of judgment whatsoever, because I like the guy and I listen to his podcast. Roddy Piper comes from the old Kearney tradition, and it's the traveler working, just everything's kind of a work. And Stone Cold came in at the end of that territory system, didn't do it as long. He did it, but it wasn't as ingrained into the fabric of him. But Stone Cold is he says it, a global icon and national treasure. He is a global businessman. And a businessman and a carny are going to butt heads on topics such as these. And it's great. It's hilarious because if you said what two former wrestlers would get into it, I would have never picked those two.
Yeah, it was very entertaining, man. So if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to Piper's latest podcast where it's Will Sasso imitates Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Piper's laughing. It's hilarious. Jim Duggan falls forward hook, line, and sinker. He really thinks it's Austin because Duggan's on the phone, and just very, very funny. Other than that, that was pretty much all we got for today, Doc. You want to touch on anything else? We gotta wrap this puppy up, man.
No, I'm good. Oh, I do have something. When I wrapped this up last week, I'm glad that we had two listeners take my advice. Two listeners of the Booking the Territory podcast. Listen to my advice. I said, "Happy birthday, America! Drink a bunch of beer and get your whole hand in front of the firework." We had a guy, a former listener of ours, blow his head clean off with a firework after drinking a bunch of beer. So, you know,
yeah.
That's a former listener that listened to my advice. The second one was, and as a Cowboy fan, this makes me super happy, is that Jason Pierre-Paul blew off his finger, had to have it amputated this week from shooting off fireworks. And since he plays for the Giants and the NFC East, thanks a lot. We appreciate that. And, again, all of you listeners, when I give you advice, especially around the holidays, make sure you listen.
I'm sure they'll think about it next time, seeing that we had a couple people blow their fingers off. So, all right, Doc, I ain't got nothing else, man. It was good talking to you. I hope you have a safe trip back home once you leave your destination, wherever you're at, because you make it sound like you're on some type of illustrious vacation. Other than that, top secret. Yeah, my ass hurts. Other than that, man, I think that's all that we got today. Hey, listen up, fans. So next week, I can't remember. We either have these are both recorded already. We either have Luke Hawks up, or I have the Shalmation Sensation from Wildcat in New Orleans, August 15th. If you have never been to a Wildcat Sports and Entertainment show, you don't want to miss it. Very good, top-notch, independent pro wrestling, one of the largest independent pro wrestlings in the wrestling corporations in the country today. They are rolling, man. They pack over 1,000 people in their house every single show. The show that they'll have here was on August 15th is titled X-Rated. No, it's not some stupid porn show because they were getting questions like that. It's just an adult-only show, so they're going to probably take it to the extreme with certain things. I did talk to Luke this week, and he couldn't really say a whole lot about it because obviously they want to surprise the fans for what they have, but it's going to be a really good show. They always put on a good show, so keep that in mind. Other thing I want to do is say thanks again to TNA's Wrestling Palace for their sponsorship. Doc, you don't know this, but I got another sponsor this week, so they're coming aboard starting hopefully next week. They just have to send me their package and everything that we're going to discuss and plug the show on, so that's coming next week. But if they're listening to this, they'll know who I'm talking about. We'll announce them next week. Other than that, I don't have anything else, man. I guess we'll just we'll close this thing out. Keep sending your questions to us at the BTT podcast page. So that's at BTT_podcast. Look us up on Facebook under Booking the Territory. And I think that's about it, man. I ain't got nothing else. So let's get on up out of here. We'll catch y'all next week. Book it. Show you how I live now, tell me how.